a roundup of the main business news from China and elsewhere. This is Global Business.
From CGTN headquarters in Beijing, this is Global Business. I'm Michelle Vandenberg. Coming up on the program, Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership has come into effect in the Philippines today. We'll look at its impact. BRICS nations issue joint statement urging the use of local currencies in trade between members and partners. U.S. President Joe Biden welcomes Senate's approval to raise the debt ceiling and avert a first-ever default. And we start our program with the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership, or RCEP, which has come into effect in the Philippines from Friday. The country's tariff commitments under the agreement will also be implemented from the same day. According to Philippine Trade and Industry Secretary Alfredo Pascual, the RCEP is a critical key towards achieving inclusive economic growth, not just for the Philippines, but for the entire ASEAN region. A study by the Philippine Institute for Development has indicated that the country's gross domestic product, or GDP, is expected to rise by 2.02% as a result of its participation in the RCEP. This is the world's biggest free trade agreement, and its successful implementation is expected to provide significant benefits to the region as a whole. The trade pact, which already took effect on the 1st of January last year, has created the world's largest free trade area in terms of economic size. This will bring benefits to the countries and enterprises within the region and beyond. Yu Bo-kun reports.
RCEP is a big deal. It stands for the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. It's so far the world's largest free trade agreement, covering 15 participating countries, including the 10 ASEAN countries and Australia, China, Japan, New Zealand, and South Korea. This mega deal accounts for nearly 30% of the global population and a combined one-third of the world's GDP. So what does it do? The deal aims to break down trade barriers and promote investment among member states. Under the agreement, over 90% of the merchandise trade among members will be subject to zero tariff eventually. According to the Asian Development Bank, by 2030, RCEP will add $245 billion and 2.8 million jobs to the member economies. The rules of a region under the deal makes RCEP special. It determines where a product were made and eliminates tariffs on goods traded between members. For example, a company in Vietnam is making furniture for clients in Singapore. The two are part of the ASEAN Free Trade Zone. But because some parts of the furniture are made in China, Singapore may charge a tariff on the finished product, but the RCEP will remove barriers like that, encouraging countries to look within the bloc for suppliers.
So why is the pact so important to the members? My colleague Juju is in the studio to explain. Juju.
So the RCEP has significantly boosted trade among its 15 member countries, thanks to the integration of 27 trade arrangements and 44 investment agreements. Since its implementation, China's total merchandise trade with the other 14 member states has exceeded 12.9 trillion yuan, or about 1.8 trillion US dollars in 2022, representing an impressive 7.5% year-on-year growth. This accounts for over 30% of China's total foreign trade. Additionally, China's trade with countries like Indonesia, Singapore, Myanmar, Cambodia, and Laos has grown more than 20%. China's non-financial direct investments in other RCEP nations has also increased by 18.9% in 2022 alone, while it has attracted 23.5 billion US dollars in direct investment, up 23.1% from other RCEP member states. Additionally, the RCEP member countries have abolished tariffs on over 90% of their traded goods, contributing to the promotion of free trade among its nations. A report released by the Research Institute of the Ministry of Commerce predicts that the RCEP will positively impact trade and investments in the region. By 2035, it is expected to lead to an 18.3% cumulative increase in exports, a 9.6% cumulative increase in imports, and a 1.5% increase in regional investment compared to its its benchmark. After the Philippines signed the RCEP agreement, which is a free trade agreement between 15 Asia-Pacific nations, including China, it officially came into force in the country. As a result, the Philippines will now be providing zero tariff treatment to imports to China's automobiles and ports, some plastic products, air conditioning, and other goods. In addition to this, over 100 service sectors will also be opened up by the Philippines, with a particular focus on commerce, telecommunications, finance, agriculture, and manufacturing. And for more on this, our correspondent Gretchen Malalet interviewed Assistant Secretary Alan Gapti from the Department of Trade and Industry, who is also the Philippines' lead RCEP negotiator. Take a listen.
We have to intensify really our trade education and advocacy campaign. Our stakeholders must know the simple procedures that RCEP offers to them as far as conducting trade is concerned. They have to know the preferential arrangement that we have secured under this agreement. And of course, in general, the opportunities that this mega free trade deal offers to them.
So what industries will greatly benefit from RCEP? Will industries that trail behind in the import-export business see a revival under RCEP?
Based on the study that we have conducted, among the top sectors that would benefit would be the electronic equipment and machinery equipment sector. This is, this would include also other sectors like agriculture, particularly on vegetables, fruits, nuts, and other processed products. In the process, the construction industry is also perceived to benefit from RCEP due to an expected inflow of foreign investment. Because if you really want to optimize the benefits and advantages of the agreement, then it is imperative that you invest also in infrastructure. And in the process, definitely construction industry would be one big sector that will benefit from it. Mm-hmm. And to complement this, sectors like transportation, logistics, and of course, manufacturing would be benefiting also.
So that's all from me. Back to you, Michelle.
Thanks very much, Juju, for that. Now, in Shenzhen, customs have just cleared the first shipment to the Southeast Asian country under the agreement. Xu Hua has more.
The first batch of goods under RCEP has just been cleared by customs at Huanggang Port in Shenzhen and will arrive on the Philippines market in around 2 weeks.
Starting from June the 2nd, the Philippines will enjoy favorable tariffs in trade with China on automobiles, certain plastic products, textiles, and more. After transaction period, tariffs on the above products will gradually be reduced to zero.
We've mainly exported the core materials and semi-finished products today. After RCEP comes into effect, the total amount of our exports to the Philippines is expected to increase by 2 to 3 times compared with the same period last year.
RCEP includes 15 East Asian and Pacific nations, totaling around 1/3 of the global population and GDP. The ratification of the Philippines is the latest step in regional integration. China is the Philippines' largest trade partner, with bilateral trade reaching more than $87 billion in 2022. By reducing trade barriers, RCEP is widely expected to promote increased trade and investment flows between China and the Philippines. Xu Hua, CGTN, Shenzhen, Guangdong Province.
Now for more insights on the RCEP, we're joined by Austin Ong, an analyst with the Integrated Development Studies Institute. Austin, thank you so much for joining us. First, let's talk about the big picture. What is the potential impact of RCEP, the largest free trade area in the world, on regional and also on global economy?
Thanks for having us. Greetings from Manila. RCEP is important for post-recovery efforts, not only in the global economy, but the impending or ongoing geopolitical tensions. The region, as we know, has been one of the positive areas in the world in an unstable post-pandemic world. At the same time, RCEP shows that even top three regional players, of course, China, Japan, and South Korea, even though they have ongoing issues that they are managing and working towards some kind of a resolution, they are economically in cognizant of the importance of economic integration. And of course, the Philippines was the last signatory to RCEP, and today is the first day where the application will begin. So we look forward to the application. Of course, on paper, it looks optimistic and promising that it is promoting regional, more streamlined regional trade promoting and supporting the MSMEs that has proven to be the bedrock in the Asian miracle story. However, the application and the implementation, as we know, the 15 economies are also not on par with each other. There's a wide discrepancy. So we are looking forward and with cautious optimism.
Now, you're in the Philippines. How do you think businesses in the Philippines, particularly those involved in cross-border e-commerce, benefit from being the last member to implement the free trade agreement?
To be honest, the Philippines is a special case that really requires a special study, because the Philippines has always been an outlier in not only in Asia in general, but specifically in ASEAN. And the Philippines, to be honest, even the businessmen are not as keen or not as well informed of the technical details or the benefits that RCEP, you know, it's in the newspaper as a general headline. It promotes regional trade, advocates for stronger MSMEs, streamlining the requirements for trade among the 15 countries. But in terms of how to apply it across industries and within industries, for example, our agricultural sector, the lone senator who voted against the RCEP is actually the sister of the president. And she correctly warns that it will get quite a bit worse before it gets any better for the Philippines, because the transition, the Philippines is more of a consumer-driven economy rather than a production-based. We are not known to be a manufacturing priority for the big players. We are known for our service and hospitality sector, so how RCEP will be interlinked to the service sector will be, I think, a more interest for many Filipino entrepreneurs and businesses.
Definitely. Thank you so much. Very interesting insights. Austin Ong with the Integrated Development Studies Institute in Manila for us. Foreign ministers of BRICS have called for the use of its members' local currencies in international trade and financial transactions among BRICS members and their trading partners. This was among the key points of a foreign minister's statement issued on Thursday during their two-day meeting in Cape Town, South Africa. They reiterated their support for the group's new development bank in becoming a key multilateral development institution. The ministers stressed the importance of financial inclusion so that their citizens can reap the benefits of economic growth. The ministers expressed support for the multilateral trading system with the World Trade Organization at its core and for continuing the process of IMF governance reform. On geopolitics, the ministers expressed concerns about unilateral coercive measures and called for an enhancement of global governance through an efficient and accountable international system. They emphasized the importance of strengthening multilateralism and upholding international law while safeguarding the role of the UN. They also discussed policies to expand BRICS membership. Among the countries that have formally applied or expressed interest in joining BRICS is Egypt. Yasser Kahim has more from Cairo.
Reports of Egypt's candidacy request go as far back as when Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi attended the 2017 BRICS summit in China as a guest of honor.
The main criteria for that is to be a growing economy, promising one, and matching with the new economic order that is going on and led by BRICS countries, mainly China. So I think those are the most important criteria, and I think that Egypt is a little bit well fit in that criteria.
Egypt has close economic and trading ties with the BRICS member nations. China is Egypt's largest trading partner, with volume standing at $16.9 billion in 2022. Trade with India stands at $7.51 billion, Russia at $4.7 billion, and Brazil at $3.4. In 2021, Egypt became the first non-BRICS African member of the $100 billion New Development Bank formed by the group.
Entering the BRICS under the New Development Bank will allow access to finance at better terms than the West's IMF and World Bank's stringent conditions, and help achieve projects for sustainable development 2030. Egypt is freeing itself from the dependence on the US and the West, who have politically motivated conditions and infringe on sovereignty in return for economic aid.
Experts believe Cairo would add value as well by becoming a BRICS member.
Egypt also is very promising for BRICS. It is a very important gate and a door open for Africa, for North Africa, for Arab countries, Middle East. So I think both sides will be benefit from Egypt membership.
The GDP of BRICS member nations has grown exponentially in recent years. Further expansion of the group can make it a considerable heavyweight that can help create a multipolar world order.
Most of the countries that have applied for BRICS membership are not on bad terms with the US, but they have been bound by the stringent conditions imposed by the West, which are mainly political conditions that infringe on their sovereignty. That's why they want to join BRICS. Let's be clear. The bloc is not a competitor nor an enemy of the West.
What remains to be seen is whether the group plans to expand in the near future. Now all eyes will be closely monitoring the outcomes and recommendations of the BRICS foreign ministers meetings and the summit in South Africa. Yes, Hakim for CGTN, Cairo, Egypt.
China Energy Investment Corp, a state-owned power generator, has successfully launched operations at the largest coal-linked carbon capture, utilization and storage facility in Asia. The facility is situated adjacent to the Taizhou Thermal Coal Power Plant in Jiangsu Province. According to the group, the facility has the capacity to store up to 500,000 tons of carbon dioxide annually. The entire project was designed, manufactured, and installed solely by China with an innovative approach that involves the largest carbon dioxide compressor in the country that's reducing capture power consumption by 10% compared to traditional methods. Reducing emissions has increasingly been recognized as a safe and effective way to tackle the global greenhouse effect.
Through research on nearby parks and enterprises and analyzing their carbon dioxide usage needs, Taizhou Power Plant has successfully integrated into the regional carbon cycle, efficiently utilizing its capacity to consume 500,000 tons of carbon dioxide each year, while maintaining stable profitability. This achievement serves as a model for long-term sustainable operation of Code CCUS.
The U.S. Congress has approved the bill to raise America's debt ceiling after the Senate's passage on late Thursday. The deal lifts the government's $31.4 trillion debt ceiling, averting what would have been a historic first-ever default. Benji Heyer has more.
With that, America will be breathing a huge sigh of relief. In fact, not just this country, but the whole world. It was pretty close to the line, but having been given the green light by the two chambers of Congress and after a series of attempted yet unsuccessful amendments, this bill has cleared the legislature and can now go on to the executive, the White House. President Joe Biden will back this deal, preventing that debt default that would have sent global financial markets into disarray. Some Republicans, it's worth saying, on the right still believe that this deal does not cap spending enough. Some Democrats on the left believe that it went too far in that respect and that it lowers the opportunity for those on low incomes to receive aid, for example. And we saw some big names vote against the deal. But ultimately, after weeks of, you know, weeks of both sides finding consensus very hard to come by, and with there still being an incredible amount of division on Capitol Hill, here, close to midnight, ultimately, lawmakers decided to back the bill.
Wall Street traders were closely monitoring the debt ceiling bill on Thursday, with the overall consensus being positive. As a result, U.S. stocks closed higher for the day, with the Nasdaq Composite Index being the biggest winner. Our John Tarrant reports from New York.
After the closing bell on the Thursday session, Broadcom out of San Jose in California gave us their earnings. Wall Street watching very closely because they wanted to see if Broadcom could replicate what Nvidia did last week, which is to say they would boost their sales of AI chips by about 50%. Well, in the end, Broadcom couldn't quite do that. They did beat on the top and the bottom line, very good. But the bosses of the company said that they'd take a measured approach to ramping up their AI production. And for that reason, the shares were down 2%, maybe 1% after a while in the immediate aftermath of that news. And Lululemon, which is a major retailer here, it sells sporting apparel, shares up 11% after they beat on the top and the bottom line as well. Two different reactions, though. On the main markets, well, that deal that passed the House of Representatives on Wednesday night, initially the markets on Thursday were in the red, but then they turned very much into the green. The Dow was up 0.5%, 153 points, to stand at almost exactly 33,000. NASDAQ up 1.2%, 165 points. S&P 500 ahead by 1%, 41 points, to stand at 4221, with 2 out of 11 sectors in the red only on the Thursday session. Bitcoin down a bit, 0.6%. Now, later Friday, 12:30 GMT, we get the non-farms report. That's the government jobs report for the month of May, a key component when deciding what to do about interest rates, which the Federal Reserve must do again on the 13th and 14th of this month. John Terrett, CGTN, on the trading floor of the New York Stock Exchange.
Now, Moody's, a global ratings agency, has stated that policy mistakes made by U.S. authorities, such as the looming possibility of default on its debt, are posing the greatest threats to the U.S. dollar's dominant position. These remarks were made on Thursday as negotiators approached the final moments of their efforts to raise the government's debt ceiling. The share of the U.S. dollar in the government's foreign exchange reserves has already fallen to a 20-year low of 58% in the fourth quarter of 2022, according to data from the International Monetary Fund. This marks a significant decline from its position at nearly 80% by the end of the 20th century. The decline of the U.S. dollar dominance in the global trading system is evident in one of its biggest allies, the United Arab Emirates. The second largest economy in the Arab world is in talks with India to settle non-oil trade using Indian rupees. Jim Stenman has more.
It's the world's dominant currency underpinning American power, and largely unchallenged for as long as most can remember.
Having said all of that, there does seem to be an opening for some competition, albeit on a small scale, as this country, a major U.S. ally, explores trading outside of the dollar.
It's definitely been a trend, I would say, for the region to lean to the east. And with that came the idea of using non-dollar currencies for trade in energy and also in other goods.
The UAE, which yields significant influence in the Middle East, is in talks to conduct non-oil trade with India in rupees. This after a recent trade deal between the Emirates and the world's most populous country, which aims to increase bilateral non-oil trade to $100 billion in the next few years.
Yeah, I think this is an important story, growing sign of the world sort of trying to move away from a dollar denominator or a dollar controlled or US controlled economic system.
Back in March, China conducted its first ever yuan settled LNG deal in the UAE, seen by many as a blow to the US, but crucially billed in dollars, indicating US currency, which Gulf countries' own money is pegged to, won't lose dominance anytime soon.
The UAE is very keen on promoting trade with India. There's a lot of strategic plays going on there, certainly on the energy side.
And boosting ties with India just makes sense, with its citizens accounting for the largest expat group in the UAE, far exceeding that of locals, but both of whom now benefit from removed tariffs on roughly 80% of all goods and zero duty access to 90% of Indian exports.
The idea is that if they conduct that trade in rupees, then it'll make the cost of business go down and hopefully foster more trade in the future.
We haven't seen any transactions from Saudi Arabia in general in non-dollar currencies. This is kind of the testing ground here. It usually happens in the UAE first. Perhaps Aramco would be next.
For now, though, talks of any non-dollar transactions, whether these actually materialize or not, should probably be read as a political statement more than anything else.
The last couple of years, the level of sanctions that have been imposed by the US and other countries on certain people, I think there is a fear amongst a lot of other countries that, you know, maybe that could happen to them one day. There is a need there to really try and say, well, let's have an alternative to dealing in the dollar.
And while the US will remain a dominant force in global trade for decades to come, the very idea of de-dollarization is one that it'll have to respond to at some point in the future. Jim Stenman, CGTN, Dubai.
British dairy sector is facing a new challenge with the soaring popularity of plant-based alternatives. Charlotte Parson reports.
5 a.m. in London. No sound but the birds. No one on the streets but the milkman.
We deliver all types, from your regular full cream, semi-skim, skimmed. We also do organic milk. Again, same varieties.
Peter Burcham has been doing this job for 40 years. The British milkman with his traditional glass bottles has been around for nearly a century and a half, a rare constant in a fast-changing world. But change is coming to the dairy industry as concerns over health, animal rights and the environment fuel a rise in sales of non-dairy milk substitutes. And nowhere is this change more apparent than in places like this.
It used to be that when a barista asked you what kind of milk you wanted in your latte, they meant full fat or skimmed. Today, they're offering almond or oat, soy or coconut, and more people are choosing those options.
Roughly about 5 people out of 10 ask for dairy-free alternatives. And if you compare with around 3 to 5 years ago, it has increased quite a lot, as probably about 1 in 10 people used to order dairy-free alternatives.
Nearly half of British adults consume plant-based alternatives as part of their diet, drinking $125 million worth of them in a year. And that number looks set to rise. 46% of Brits say they're thinking about reducing their intake of animal products in the near future. But that doesn't mean cow's milk is being put out to pasture just yet. 52% of people still consume it. One of milk's main advantages over its new rivals is price. It remains the cheapest choice. But the gap isn't as big as it used to be. The price of milk has risen 35% in the past year, while the price of alternatives rose more slowly. As plant-based products fill shelves that were once the exclusive domain of milk, a war over words has broken out. Dairy groups are calling for the likes of almond milk, plant-based yogurt, and vegan cheese to be renamed so consumers don't mistake them for dairy products. The EU has rejected that argument, but the UK is considering it right now. Charlotte Parsons, CGTN, London.
And that will do it for this edition of Global Business here on CGTN. I'm Shavan Nimberg in Beijing. Thank you for watching.